Welcome everyone to Procedural Meshes in Unity. My name is Alexander Burke, and I have been working with Unity for quite a while now. And last year I started my own company called Out of Bounds Games. I'm currently working on my first title, and I'm using procedural meshes a lot in that game. And I'm going to use that as an example for a lot of techniques later. So this is the agenda for the talk. I'm first going to cover like why you should use procedural meshes, what are they actually good for, the basics of generating them, and some neat stuff you can do with like meshes, and also some tips and traps, tips and tricks for optimization and debugging. And I think this is sort of like the meat and potatoes of the talk. I also have prepared a bunch of different example scripts for you to use. I'm not actually going to show that much code in the presentation itself because we're talking about meshes. It's a very like visual thing. So most of the time I'm going to use pictures. And the code is also, it's sort of like, it's not very easy to share on slides because it's quite often quite long. So that's why I have these prepared these examples for you. My own procedural mesh examples are really good to start out with because they are more basic than Unity's own procedural mesh examples. I would say they are quite often a bit more interesting because they're really trying to showcase as much functionality of the engine as possible. Finally, there's also a link to something called triangle.net, which I have ported for Unity to do. It's a library that does Delaunay triangulation, which I'm going to cover later on in the talk. So I guess a good place to start is like, why use procedural meshes? What do you get out of them? Well, first off, player-made content is a major reason to use them. Like a good example is Spore's Creature Creator, where the act of like being able to actually sculpt your own creatures and automatically have them be rigged and for the player to like add color and texture to them. It's something that creates a lot of like gameplay and a lot of like player expression. They can also allow for unique mechanics. Gish from it's a quite old game by now, but it's still like really really great. You're this like tar blob that can either be slippery, sticky, or heavy, and that wouldn't be possible if you couldn't actually like generate this mesh of it on the fly, so it looks like something that is like sort of liquidy and can squeeze through tight spaces. Finally, procedural generation is a really like hot topic these days. Like a lot of games are using it, including my own game. A really good example of that is Sir, You're Being Hunted, which is made by a group of British developers. They basically wrote a British countryside procedural generational algorithm, and they have, for example, like fences that are generated on the fly to like fit whatever biomes they have, and other really cool procedural mesh generation. So if you're interested in that sort of in these techniques, like I would suggest looking at that game. So let's cover the basics first. A mesh is a structure that is made out of points called vertices, and these vertices are connected into triangles. It's triangles because that is what modern GPUs are like made to render out. Like this is like all the way down to the hardware level. Depending on what material you use on your mesh, you might need more information per vertex than just the position itself, which I'm going to cover later. If you're doing procedural meshes in Unity, this is a component you need. You need a mesh filter that stores the mesh. You need a mesh renderer that shows the mesh, and you need a script that generates the mesh. In all my examples, the script is on the object itself, but of course that doesn't actually have to be the case. You can also have the script be somewhere else in your scene. So this is pretty much like the most simple mesh you can generate. It's triangle, as you can see. And the first thing you do is that you create an instance of the mesh class. This is Unity's wrapper into like Unity's wrapper for whatever 3D API that the platform is running on. So that can either be OpenGL or DirectX or something more exotic if you're, for example, making a console game. The first thing you need to do is to assign vertices. So here I'm creating a flat one-dimensional array, and I'm filling it with the positions of each vertex. I then assign it to the mesh, and then I assign the triangles. So triangles is basically just to tell Unity like what vertices, like what indices in the vertex array are connected together, which is just like a series of integers. And after that, you get the mesh filter that you want to assign to, and set its mesh to the mesh you just created. The triangle in the last example only had couldn't actually be shaded. It couldn't interact with lighting. And you can see the triangle on the right is actually capable of that. And that's because it has normals defined. And normals are basically just in what way is your surface pointing at each vertex. Quite often you can also use like vertex colors. This used to be the way back in before like dedicated GPUs that you would actually define like the look of a mesh or the color of a mesh because it was quick. These days it's sometimes useful, for example, for particles. And in this example, again, we have a one-dimensional array, and I then have a function somewhere else in this code example where I take a hue value that's from the HSV color model, and I then convert that this function then converts that hue into a color value. And I'm also applying an offset based on time. So what you actually see here is that I am sort of like rotating a color wheel around as a result, because it's animated with time. The color banding is because it's a GIF. Lastly, UVs are basically a way of defining extra information for a mesh. And it's mostly used for textures. And a texture is basically the ability to take a flat image and sort of like wrap it around a 3D model. A UV map is usually defined as going from 0, 0 to 1, 1. You can actually assign UV coordinates that goes outside of that. And depending on what the texture is set to do, that'll either clamp to like the edges of the texture. So you would sort of like, we had like -1 and the texture was set to clamp, then the last row of pixels here would actually keep like repeating. Quite often what you really want to do is have the texture set to repeat, so like the texture will just tile. And that's something you do inside Unity's texture import settings. This is how you assign the UVs. You first define a one-dimensional array that needs to be the length of the vertices you have. You then assign UV coordinates to each position in the array, and you then assign the UVs. All of these basic examples, I'm using standard arrays. In my own code, I quite often use lists simply because it's more flexible, and a lot of the time you don't actually know how many like vertices, UVs and normals and triangles you need beforehand. So it just makes your code a lot easier to write. Of course, it's not as performant, but that's a trade-off that's quite often worth it. So setting triangle indices is often the most difficult and hair-pulling part of this whole process. I'll cover a fairly simple example here, and you can already see the code is actually fairly complicated. This is the code for generating the triangles for a simple plane. And the tricky part is for each 4 vertices we have, we actually have 6 triangle indices, because we have 2 triangles that each consist of 3 vertices. So you need to write a loop that basically does that, such as what I have here on the right. You can see I'm always like keeping track of like what vertex am I currently on, and that's made even like more difficult by the fact that like all the vertices are actually laid out in a one-dimensional array. I guess this is like what makes procedural mesh code so difficult. Like you're trying to define, like describe something which is happening in three-dimensional space, or in this case just in two-dimensional space, but in a one-dimensional way, like in code. And of course you can do it with a double for loop as I've done here, but it's still like it's not as easy to understand as other game programming topics as a result. But let's try and walk through it. So if we start here on the first vertex of the mesh, then the vertex index will be 1 because x is 1 and y is 1. So that gives us that one, and that's the first triangle index we set. We then need to go to the one next to it over here, but in this case I've actually generated the layout of the vertices to basically go from 0, 1, 2, 3, and etc. And then it repeats with the length here. So in order to get to this one over here, I actually have to add the width of the plane. And in order to get to this one up here, I then have to add one plus one. In order to create the next triangle up here, it's the current vertex my loop is on, but it's also, in order to get to this one up here, again, it's width of the plane plus one. And then to get to this one over here, it's the current vertex plus one. And you can already see like something as simple as a plane. The loop is actually like the code in order required to generate it is fairly complicated, and it's easy to get something wrong because you have so many, like you need to write so many lines in order to do something like fairly simple. This is an example of something that was a lot harder for me to triangulate. This is a fog of war system for a hex-based strategy game. And as you can see, I have hexes with smaller hexes inside it. So wherever there's like a boundary between like what is in Fog of War and what has been revealed, we can have like a soft change in color set in the vertices. This was made for a mobile game, so it was designed to be really, really fast. And you're probably looking at this and thinking like, how the heck do you triangulate this? And what I found that helps quite a lot is to draw it out. So what I did is that I created on paper like how the mesh should be, and then I started to look at it and like try and see if I could find like the topology, like how the how each vertex would actually be connected to its neighbors. And I quickly found out that there was actually like a structure to it, like, and that's what you see down here, like each column of vertices that are similar in like how they are laid out has the same character down here. And when it came time to actually write the triangulation code, I basically made functions that would be called like triangulate A to B and triangulate B to C and triangulate D to B and B to C and so on. As you might expect, this took a while to get right. All right, let's go to the next slide. So there's a lot of really cool things you can do with procedural meshes. This is from an old prototype of mine, which is like a morphable physics puzzler where you can change the shape of the world. And this wouldn't be possible without procedural meshes. The way that it works is by basically having everything that is bendable be a mesh. And I then take each vertex position like in the unwrapped state, and I use it as polar coordinates. So I basically take the x position, that becomes like an angle, like where it should happen, like in what direction should the point be when the world is wrapped. And I then go and take the height in world units, that's basically how far from the center it should be. And getting that to just like do the flip instantaneously, that was actually kind of easy. But getting this nice animation, that took a lot more work, and that was basically done by having a couple of Bezier curves sort of act like the normal vectors of the world. So I would take and map like the direction in radians onto this unit Bezier curve, and then use like generate a normal based on that value, and then that would be like the offset into the world that the point would end up at. On my current game, Laser Disco Defenders, which was announced for PS Vita this Monday, actually. I'm like, pretty much every single thing is procedural mesh. It's a self-inflicted bullet hell, I guess is the most precise description we've come up with so far. You basically have to survive as many procedurally generated caves as you can. The trouble is that each shot you fire, each laser beam actually stays in the level and keeps bouncing around. So the more you shoot, the harder you make it for yourself. And pretty much everything you see on the screen here is actually procedural meshes. So, for example, the laser beams are created by having these, it's called a quad strip. It's basically quads, rectangles connected together. And you can see here I have caps on the laser beams, like I have the ends and I have the center. And that's the way that's made is by having like a small quad here, a longer quad in the middle, and then like an end quad here as well. What made this a bit tricky is that you can, for example, have a laser that's actually shorter than like the graphics for the ends. In that case, I just I don't render this thing in the middle. That's actually what you can see probably right here. Or it's just a random particle. There's also a good chance it's that. I also have these flares, and that's basically just by generating more quads wherever there's like an impact between a laser and something that bounces them. Depending on how much time I have left at the end of the talk, I might actually go switch over to Visual Studio and show you the code for this. But it's using a lot of tricks to accelerate it, which you wouldn't understand straight away unless you've seen the rest of the talk. So I got this idea fairly early on in the project. I knew I was going to release for Vita, and it's a handheld console. There's not a lot of performance to work with, so you have to be really efficient in what you're doing on it. And I had already like experimented with basically having light sources and everything, because this is a game about like disco and lasers. Like everything needs to be like shiny and give off light. And I just couldn't use like Unity's standard deferred lighting system because it was just too slow to run on the Vita. Basically, if you use the frame debugger in Unity, which allows you to like step through all the draw calls, you can actually see that each light source you have is adds one draw call, because it has to be rendered into the light buffer. So how can we optimize that? Well, I know this is like, I have the constraint that this is a 2D game, and I don't really have any I don't have anything that obscures a light source. As you can see here, any kind of light, it's both on the background and it's on the level elements and also on the foreground of the level. So what I ended up doing is actually create a dynamic mesh. And it's like, for example, for the lasers, it's pretty much exactly the same code that generates the actual visual lasers. I also have a component I can just add onto something that will automatically be detected and add a quad. So for example, you can see this guy, he actually has a light on him, which you see here in the background right here. The laser beams that their light is a lot stronger, so you can see those quads a lot more. And then I render that into a render texture with a camera that renders before the rest of the game. And a pretty nice accidental discovery I made is that this render texture can actually be super low resolution. As you can see, you can actually see the individual pixels, but you can't actually see that in the final game, because there's still like enough precision in the light map for it to not be a problem, which means that this technique not only uses one draw call, but it also uses a lot less fill rate, a lot less cycles on the GPU than Unity's built-in deferred lighting system would actually use. Let's see if we have any questions. Thank you. I am quite pleased with it myself. Was there a reason to make everything procedural? Mostly I like it. It's fun to make. That was sort of like the why I made it in the first place. It does also mean that I don't have to create I have to create like a level generation algorithm. Like I have to create a super structure that can make levels, but I don't have to design levels myself, which I don't really enjoy that much. It's much more fun to try and figure out what makes a fun level than it is to make 100 levels that are fun, if that makes sense. On the topic of level generation, this is a typical level in the game. This took a fair amount to get right. I think this is like the fourth or fifth iteration I've had on my algorithm. It's been in some ways more procedural. Like right now it's using a sort of like a bag of existing like layouts, and then it stitches them together. As you can see, this is two caves that share the same layout. But it just proved to be a lot easier to handle this and also debug it if there's something, if there's a bug in the generation, I can actually go back and look at exactly what rule generated the specific cave. So the foreground in the level, like what you see here, that's actually also a procedural mesh that looks like that. And you can probably see that finding a way to triangulate this manually is quite painful. I have, instead of like trying to find a way to do it myself, I looked online and I found something called the Delaunay triangulation. And what the Delaunay triangulation does is that it creates like triangulation of a given point, set of points in traditionally in the 2D plane, but it can also be like for 3D mesh or for a 3D cloud of points. But and it also like assures that each triangle is as like evenly angled as it can possibly be, and still like triangulate the whole set. And that's really important because you don't want what's called skinny triangles, like this one up here, for example. It's not super skinny, but it's still a fairly skinny triangle, and that can cause trouble with rendering because there's not a lot of like triangle to basically interpolate over when the GPU has to render them. So you want something that is more akin to what you see over here. The downside of using this like generic approach to generating a triangulation is that it's fairly slow. It can be between n log n and n log log n with the fastest algorithm out there. And that can possibly be too slow. Like right now in my game, it takes between 30 to 50 milliseconds to triangulate, which isn't too bad, but I have some problems with the numerical precision, it seems. So I'm going to probably end up like doing my own triangulation algorithm for the levels anyhow. But if you have something where you're like, okay, how can I actually do this quick? And if you just want to test something out, Delaunay triangulation is probably a good fit. And I've actually ported an existing library called triangle.net for Unity, which is the link I showed at the start of the talk. So tips and tricks. Let's see if we have any questions in the meantime. So someone is asking about the size of the game. It's kind of small. Like a lot of this is just like textures, and it can run on a Vita. And you can look the specs up for the Vita yourself. But you don't have a lot of memory to play around with. So like all of these techniques I'm covering here, they also work for mobile if you make sure that you also optimize them. So someone is asking into the benefit of pre-rendering the lighting. Basically, like you also pre-render with the Unity's deferred lighting system, but every light source creates a draw call, which is slow. It's not really a problem on desktop, but it's a problem on mobile devices. Another benefit is also that I can actually create light sources in any kind of shape, because it's just a texture I'm sort of like stamping into the light map, the light buffer. So that's, for example, why I can actually get a light source that fits a long laser beam, for example. That wouldn't be possible with Unity's deferred lighting system, where the closest match you have is really like a standard circle light. I hope that answers the question. So, tips and tricks. A lot of the times when you see like talks on a given game programming topic, they don't really talk too much about how to actually debug it when something goes wrong. So I'm going to do that. Since meshes are visual, and since your code is likely going to be quite confusing to read through, unless you're in the thick of it, it's really good to use the gizmos and the debug class to basically draw like the information. So for example, here on the right, I'm actually using, I'm drawing all the vertices. So if there was like a problem with the triangulation and I couldn't actually see my mesh as a result, then I can at least make sure that the vertices are where they are supposed to be. And that's the mistake you're probably going to make most often. Like your vertices are correct, but because your triangles are either pointing the wrong way or are between like the wrong vertices, you're not actually seeing the mesh you should see. It can also be a good idea to rotate your view just to make sure that you haven't assigned the triangles like the wrong way around, so they are basically pointing away from the camera. That's because of what is called the face culling. Basically, there's no idea in rendering a triangle that is pointing away from the camera most of the time. So that's an optimization that is built into most shaders, that they just don't show up as a result. Again, turning wireframe rendering on in the scene view can also be handy, because it allows you to very quickly see like, okay, where is my mesh? And again, you see the connection between like the triangles, you see the triangle connections between the vertices. If you want to optimize meshes that are generated on the fly, but then are static, such as, for example, a landscape, you can use Mesh Optimize. That will tell Unity to basically take the layout you've given it and reshuffle it, so it's quicker to render out. As you can probably guess, this is a fairly slow operation, so you should only use it if it's something that's not like changing every frame of the game. You can also use Static Batching Utility. That's basically the same as like marking a mesh, a game object in Unity to be static, but you can do it on the fly, and that allows you to also reduce draw calls. If you're doing dynamic meshes, which in my opinion is the more interesting thing, because it allows for like, I don't know, interesting game mechanics, you can mark the mesh to be dynamic. And that tells OpenGL, DirectX, or whatever graphics API is being used by Unity on the platform you're targeting to basically put the mesh in memory on the graphics card that can be more quickly updated. Most of the time, the paradigm is that you send something over to the GPU, and then it doesn't really change because you will do the changes to it, like where, for example, it's positioned in the command to actually render it to the screen. And something I've found out that can also be quite an optimization, and I'm not actually quite sure why this is to double buffering your meshes. I think it has something to do with if you use multi-threaded rendering, or maybe in the background, Unity has an easier time. It doesn't have to like wait for a mesh upload to finish before it can start a new one or something like that. The drawback is that you end up using more memory, because we have to actually like switch between two meshes. But most of the time, that's not too big of an issue. A thing they added in, I think it was Unity 5, is that now you can also set like mesh attributes with this function called set and whatever attribute it is. And that's really handy because it allows you to set a list of whatever it is you have directly instead of first having to convert it to an array, which saves you a cast and is quite slow. So that's also a really like nice, easy performance optimization you can do. Something that also has helped me quite a lot is basically figure like out like what do you have to render, and like more importantly, what do you not have to render? And basically everything, if there's something which is outside the camera view, like what the player can actually see, there's often no reason to actually render it. So one of the most like effective optimizations I've actually made was basically just like a test, like where are the laser beams in my game, and if they're outside the camera, then I don't waste time on actually like putting them into the mesh for the lasers, and there's no lighting calculators for them either. And as you can see here, when I turn it on and off, it's a huge performance improvement. Sort of like the next step I'm in the middle of maybe taking, but I'm not sure it's worth it, is to multi-thread the mesh generation. The Unity API is not thread safe, unfortunately. But as you might understand from like the previous slides, like generating your vertices and like the rest of your mesh data, quite often it's something you like. It's not actually reliant on calling something in the mesh or like in Unity's API. It's just something that you have defined yourself in some mathematical way. So it can be quite easy to multi-thread it and then send the data back to the mesh class on the main thread in Unity. So for example, if we take a look at my game, like this is a single frame, and there is a lot of time spent on calculating beams, but when each laser has been calculated, it doesn't actually interact with anything else. Like if it has bounced, it has bounced. If it has collided with something, it's collided with something. It doesn't interact with the rest of the lasers. So at that point, I could actually just send it over to another thread and start to render it out. Instead, what I'm doing right now is that after all the beams are calculated, I then first render them, and then the lighting manager generates the light mesh for the lasers, and then it generates the rest of the light mesh for like other light sources. And as you can see, I actually have a lot of like cores left in most cases, and there's nothing happening on them. So it's very tempting to try and get this to basically go down here. And yeah, I am in the process of doing that because I'm not really that familiar with the multi-threaded programming. But it's definitely something that is a possible optimization. All right, let's see the next slide. Yeah, so in summary, procedural meshes is something that opens up a lot of possibilities for solving a wide array of like different problems that you can have in creating your games. They're made up of vertices and triangles. Sometimes you will need more data per vertex depending on what you're doing. Assigning triangle indices is most often the most tricky part, and I would recommend actually drawing it out on paper if there's any thing in the process that you are confused about. And in general, just any kind of like way of visualizing your mesh is the most easy way to both understand how to generate it, but also how to debug it. And that was pretty much everything I had. If you have any questions, or you have like something that you think will be is not really like suited for the chat, you can hit me up on my email address or tweet at me. And I guess it's time to answer some questions. There's a question about getting a polygonal flat shaded look for a mesh in Unity, and the question is, can you do that without actually having to like have the same vertex duplicated multiple times? And unfortunately, no. It's it's something that is basically happening on the graphics card itself. Like it will automatically do like a linear interpolation for vertices, and it's just been become a standard that is happening. And I'm kind of annoyed that you don't have like a switch you can hit in like OpenGL or DirectX or whatever, and actually say like don't do that kind of interpolation. I just want you to like render the triangle out directly. Unfortunately, yeah, there's no way to get around that. You just have to recreate the same vertex multiple times. I can actually switch into my game to showcase it. So, just have to restart this Xbox controller. There we go. Let's shoot some lasers. That's a space whale. Pause. So, where do I have the lighting manager? Behind all the geometry in my game, I actually have like all the lighting. It should pop into view quite soon. There we go. So I can actually see all the lighting is this mesh that I have here. And as I move it, you can see the lighting actually also moves inside the game. Which is probably a bit easier if I stick that down there. See, as I move the mesh, I also move the lighting. I basically have a camera which only renders the layer that this mesh is in, like this game object, and I then use a really low resolution buffer to render it into. So that's actually, like, you can see this is the size of my game view in pixels. This is the size of my light texture, so it's kind of tiny in comparison, which makes it a lot faster to render out. And it scales really well with like the resolution of whatever you're running the game in. Like if someone wants to run the game in like 4K, well, it will scale to also show up nicely on that as well. No, it's not using Unity's light system at all. I have written my own shaders that basically, if we click on this one, for example, this is like how the lighting system works. There's a texture or like a reference to the light texture, and I then have a base albedo map, I guess you would normally call it. It's just like the color of each pixel, and then I have a gloss map to basically define how shiny, how reflective a given part of it is. You can see that here when I move around. And I then take a given point and translate it into screen space, which is the space that this texture is in. And I then use it in a standard Blinfong lighting calculation. So yeah, as you can probably see, like a lot of this stuff is way more useful if you also understand shader programming, because you can start to do some really cool hacks. I had another project last year where we had to have a VR demo on the gear and have procedural tire marks after a car. And because everything was happening on a plane, I actually ended up using the Y-coordinate of each vertex to define how opaque, like how transparent the tire marks should be inside. I basically used it as a color value inside a shade I wrote. And that's like a way that you can, like, when you start to like understand more of the like more advanced topics of Unity, you can start to make some really like optimized and cool effects as a result. Someone is asking about collision detection. No. So I'm actually using Unity's, what's it called? 2D physics. Let's see, where is my level? It's here. I have my own polygon class, which contains like the data for like the shape of the overall level here. And I then basically split it up into smaller colliders because I have done a bit of testing and it seems to be faster that way than having one giant line collider for the whole thing. It basically, you get better spatial optimization because Unity can do like an axis line bounding box test before it actually does a collision test. At least that's what I think is happening behind the scenes. So here's the thing with Unity. A lot of the time, you have to guess what is actually happening in the background because you don't have full source code access. But it's still like, and in that case, it's good to know like the basics of like how, like for example, game physics and rendering works in order to like make some educated guesses in order to optimize your code. There was a question early on about how I... So someone is asking, what's the advantage of triangulating the outside of the level instead of the inside? Well, the main advantage is that I can actually have, if I had triangulated the inside, I couldn't have parallaxing, which I have in the game right now. You can see that the background texture actually moves in relation to the character, or actually more accurately in relation to the camera. If I did it the other way around, then I wouldn't be able to do that. Another question is, when you triangulate a level, how do you detect and remove polygons inside your spheres where the player can be? Well, basically, I don't generate anything inside my level. I'm sort of like cheating. If there's anything like inside a cave, let's see if I can find one. Nope. Okay, I have a picture of that in the presentation itself. There we go. So for example, here, where I have like the inside of an area, what I'm actually doing there is I'm spawning, right now it's actually just a standard Unity sphere with the right shader on it in the middle. Basically, a lot of Delaunay triangulations libraries, they don't really allow you to add stuff inside your holes. Like it's more correctly what I'm actually doing here is a constrained Delaunay triangulation, because I'm saying like, okay, triangulate the set of points, but don't triangulate inside the level itself. And that's simply something you can do with triangle.net. All right, I think that was it for me. Thank you so much for listening, and hope you enjoy the rest of the conference.